The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop. We also welcome James Ollie to the show. He's giving us all the latest around Spurs after that explosive press conference from Antonio Conte. Is he sacked yet, James?
No, not at the moment, but I think it's a matter of time now. Look, this has been coming to a head for a few weeks, probably even longer, really. And I think it's just the final terms of his departure, what kind of payoff he's going to get, and you know whether he'd even stay in charge beyond the international break, which looks highly unlikely. Spurs find themselves at a crossroads again. What kind of club do they want to be? What kind of manager do they want to have? Are they going to try and work it through to the end of the season with someone like Ryan Mason, as they did last time when they sat Jose Mourinho? Or are they going to try and make a permanent appointment at what is obviously a very difficult time of the season to do that? But, unfortunately, these issues between Antonio Conte and Tottenham have been bubbling along for months, and it's finally come to a head, as you say, in that explosive press conference after the Southampton game. I think really what Antonio Conte's done is voiced publicly what he's been saying privately for quite some time.
And let's remind you, shall we, of just a snippet of what he had to say in that press conference. Remember, Spurs were 3-1 up. In the end, it finished at 3-3. They're used to it here. Don't play for something important. They don't want to play under pressure. They don't want to play under stress. Tottenham's story is this. 20 years, there is the owner, and they never won something. Why? Can't say pulling no punches. What was the moment that he broke, that he just thought, I hate it here, James?
Well, I don't know if it's one moment necessarily. I think this was always a marriage of convenience to some extent. You know, Antonio Conte, he comes with his baggage, he comes with his problems, but he is a winner. He wins wherever he goes. He knew he was taking on a big job with Tottenham, and Tottenham knew that they were getting themselves into bed with a very volatile manager who has a very short cycle at clubs. He doesn't tend to last more than three seasons. And really what happened was, I think Spurs thought they would be able to get something in that sort of mini cycle, if you like. They thought they'd be able to get over the line. They felt, the club felt, that they were not that far away from winning trophies. And Antonio Conte's come in and taken a look at it and said, do you know what, actually, you're a long way away from where you need to be. I want to make a lot of changes to the playing staff. I want to bring in, obviously, my own coaching team. Most managers do that anyway. But I think he wanted a radical overhaul of the playing staff. And he only got a fraction of what he wanted. Now, you can argue that he should have got more out of what he's been given. And I think there's certainly a case for that. But I do think if you took a straw poll of a large section of Tottenham fans and asked them, who is the bigger problem at the moment? Is it Daniel Levy and the ownership of the club, or is it Antonio Conte? It would be much more evenly split than these situations often are. Even though Tottenham are probably underperforming, even though the football hasn't been great all season, what he's saying and what he said in that press conference does stand to reason. There have been long-standing issues, primarily, and the most important one is that the club have never quite invested enough to get them over the line to win the major prizes. You can go back to Harry Redknapp in 2012, that 2011-12 January window, when he wanted two big players and he got given two players on a free, Louis Saha and Ryan Nelson, I think it was, when he wanted Gary Cahill and Carlos Tevez. They didn't want to go that extra mile. They thought, well, we're just about top of the league. We're very close to it at this point in the window. At this point mid-season, maybe we can do it with the squad that we've got. And then you look at Mauricio Pochettino a few years ago. When he got to the Champions League final, even before that game, he was saying this club needs to think big. They need to think about taking it to the next level in terms of the wage bill, in terms of the size of the squad, the quality of the squad. And once again, Daniel Levy and the ownership didn't listen and they missed their opportunity. And I think what Antonio Conte is doing now is echoing those frustrations of the past.
Conte's going to go off into the sunset. He'll get another big job considering everything he's achieved before Spurs. What now for Spurs?
Don't know. I mean, it's not that long ago they hired Nuno Espirito Santo.
Yeah.
That's the kind of decision-making that's going around at Tottenham. Look, I can't really say much more than what James has said, because it's correct. There are both parties to blame here. But the one thing I would say is, I think Antonio Conte must be slightly foolish to think that Spurs were all of a sudden going to dig up what has been their mantra for, as he said, the best part of 20 years, and go down a different line for him. That's the way, whether we like it or not, and the Spurs fans certainly don't like it, that's the way they're running their business. So there is an argument that, yeah, they should be playing better, yeah, the football should be more attractive, and yeah, they should have been getting better results. I mean, Southampton bottom of the league, AC Milan, not the strongest team by a long stretch in Serie A, very meek performance at home in the second leg when they were 1-0 down. And this, and you know I said it at the time, as soon as you appointed, I said, this is going to end in tears, mark my words. It was the easiest thing to see coming. Yeah. It wasn't difficult, because Tottenham were never going to give him what he wanted. He got kind of what he wanted at Inter Milan to a certain extent, but he banged enough doors about it and tables, and that just about got him over, that did get him over the line in Serie A with the Scudetto. But he was never, ever, ever going to get enough to get Tottenham into a position to challenge. Never in 100 years, unless that club changes ownership, which I don't think it's going to do, certainly in the short term.
So this is where Spurs are. He's right. This is where they've been for 20 years, and that's where they're going to be in the future.
No, yeah, absolutely, he's right. And I think the surprising thing to that is that Antonio Conte didn't have these discussions beforehand.
Maybe he's made promises beforehand.
Well, and that's what I'm kind of thinking here. I think it's a little late to act surprised that Spurs aren't backing you in the way that you had hoped, or maybe other clubs had done in the past, because they've never done that. So unless you have those conversations coming in, you can't complain about it going out the door. At the same time, and James points out, yeah, you can split the responsibility straight down the middle here. Daniel Levy hasn't been easy to deal with in the transfer market. They've kept players when they could have moved them on and used that money, and I'm thinking Harry Kane here, could have used that to really build a squad and for the future going forward. Other players have just kind of... 12 months ago, we were talking about Heung-Min Son as being the leading scorer in the Premier League. Hugo Lloris is a keeper I absolutely love, but he should have been replaced 3 or 4 years ago. There are problems there that were evident for everyone to see that weren't addressed. So the act of surprise now, I find that surprising. Again, unless those conversations happened, promises were made, and Daniel Levy and the ownership group went back on those promises.
I think what's happened here is Spurs have thought that their deficiencies that James touched on in terms of the squad, it's the most invisible ownership in the Premier League. Mm. I think as a chief executive, Daniel Levy has figured that Antonio Conte, with his scale, with his CV, with his management style of this defensive, hard to beat, he's going to get just enough out of this squad that they're going to, that's going to propel them
right
to maybe been on the coattails.
Well, he said, didn't he, top four was a miracle last year.
So, but I think Spurs have looked at it and went, maybe we don't have to spend this amount of millions on all these players. Maybe we spend it on a salary of a manager
right
who might be able to get this current squad with a few additions. Maybe he will be the difference. But quite clearly, that's not happening.
To that point, obviously... Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to maybe give an example about the recruitment, which I think is quite illustrative of the fact that there are still competing voices at the top of the club about who they go after and squad building. So they signed Jed Spence last summer, really promising right back, had his choice of a number of clubs. Had spent the second half of last season on loan at Nottingham Forest, tore it up in the Championship, looked really good in the FA Cup. They spent £19 million on him. He plays, I think he played 2 or 3 games, and he's shipped out on loan in January. And suddenly Spurs go and spend £39 million, I think it is, on Pedro Porro. They signed him initially on loan with an obligation to buy £39 million in the same position. Now, Jed Spence has not become a bad player in 6 months. He has had no opportunity to show what he can do. Certainly in the Premier League, he's had the odd minute, literally the odd couple of minutes here, the odd couple of minutes there. He's then sent out on loan. Pedro Porro comes in right at the end of the window to play in the same position. all the while he's trying to juggle Emerson Royale, who everybody in football really knows was freely available last summer. They didn't sell him at the last minute. A decision was taken there. And then look at what happened with Matt Doherty. Matt Doherty plays a lot of the games, and then suddenly his contract is ripped up and he's sent off to Atletico Madrid. That position, just that one position alone, it just shows you that the fuzzy thinking and the confused recruitment strategy at the top of the club. And Tottenham are not a club that can afford to make those mistakes. They're not a Chelsea. They're not a Manchester United. They don't generate the revenue where they can write off 20 million here or 30 million there and just burn through players in sort of 6 months or 12-month cycles. They have to get those decisions right. And the fact of the matter is that from almost day one, Antonio Conte was describing Jed Spence as a club signing. Not his signing, very, very pointed words, a club signing. And that was pretty clearly saying, this guy's nothing to do with me. So he plays a couple of times, and now where he's out on loan at Rennes in France. That cannot continue to happen. Spurs either have to back Antonio, it looks like it's all over now anyway, but whoever they get in as a manager, and this was certainly the case with Conte, they either get a manager in and they back him, they build the squad he wants, or they do it themselves and they find a manager who will fit their own recruitment strategy. What they've done is fudge it. They've gone a couple of the steps down the road with Antonio Conte, looked okay, but not given him everything he wants. He's then blown up, as he always does, because it happens everywhere he goes, into Milan, Chelsea, Juventus, you name it. He falls out with the board over not getting enough. But Spurs knew they were getting that, but almost as if they were wary of it happening. They've never quite taken every step down one path or the other, and they've got caught, and that's left them where they are now.
So, James, when it comes to the next manager, Ryan Mason, that's going to be an interim between now and the end of the season, try and get Spurs in the top four. From there, then they bring in their permanent man. But who do they want?
Well, look, I mean, I've heard that Thomas Tuchel is a possibility. Mauricio Pochettino, a lot of the fans would like to see that. You have to wonder. I did interview Daniel Levy a few years ago, and he told me then that he would be open to Pochettino returning one day. Take that at face value with a massive pinch of salt. It's Daniel Levy. I just don't think enough has changed at the club to really warrant going back to Pochettino. All the frustrations he had in 2019 largely will still be there. On the flip side, he might be the one manager who could convince Harry Kane to stay and maybe sign a new contract if the Manchester United interest materialises. Looks that, you know, if they really went for him, I think they could get him this summer. But look, I don't think... You only need to look at the mess they went through in appointing Antonio Conte. They ended up with Nuno Espirito Santo when they went through so many other managers. He was about the fifth or sixth choice for that job. You think about Gennaro Gattuso, they were very close to appointing him. There was a fan backlash. They decided to go somewhere else. There were so many other managers in that cycle then that I don't think they know who they want. I think Thomas Tuchel, I remember he did a press conference when he was Chelsea manager talking about how he was a Tottenham fan growing up. He loved the Premier League. I think he would take that job if he was offered it. I suppose you could think about other things like Conte's 3-4-3 system. To some extent, they've built a squad around that. Tuchel liked to play with three at the back primarily, so there's a kind of a logical fit there. He's good with the media. I could see Thomas Tuchel maybe working for them. He's a big enough name that, you know, with Champions League pedigree, that Spurs would feel like they're getting a top manager. But any manager walking into that club now has got to ask themselves the question, well, if they're not going to back Antonio Conte, are they going to back me?
Right then, James, let's talk about Harry Kane, shall we? Obviously, his contract is up at the end of next season. Why would they not sell him now in the summer, get some money from him? Because surely he's not going to stay, is he?
It's difficult. Well, on the one hand, the market isn't there for Harry Kane as was 2 years ago when he tried to force through that move to Manchester City. Back then, City were keen. Obviously, they couldn't negotiate a deal with Daniel Levy. Chelsea were interested, although that's a very difficult deal to do given the rivalry between the two clubs. Manchester United were certainly interested. That market isn't there now. City have obviously signed Haaland. Chelsea are signing Nkunku for the summer. So there's not that obvious number nine position for those two, which leaves Manchester United. We don't know if United have got the money to do a deal for a 29 turning 30 year old for 100 million quid. To me, it's a no-brainer if from the Manchester United end. I think, you know, they need a top striker. He's obviously one of the best around. He would slot straight into that team. You could see how he could improve it overnight. From Tottenham's point of view, I think it would be a huge moment for them to lose their talisman. What would it say about the club, which, remember, is up for sale? What would it say about that club if they were losing a manager of Antonio Conte's pedigree amid frustrations about the way the club is run, and then their star striker of 8-9 years leaves to go to one of their main domestic rivals? What does it say about where Tottenham are going if they were to lose both?
James, is there then an argument to say, well, look, you're going to lose him for free in 12 months' time anyway, so at least you're going to make some money from him?
Yeah, exactly. And as we've sort of alluded to already, Tottenham are not a club that can just write off a £100 million asset for the sake of one season. I think if United got anywhere near that figure, 80, 90, 100 million, it would be very difficult for Tottenham to turn that down, particularly if Harry Kane once again reiterated his desire to leave. He has expressed privately that he wants to review that situation at the end of the season. I suggest that probably means whether they're going to be in the Champions League or not. But moreover than that, if Antonio Conte goes, who are they going to get in? The only manager I can think of, aside from Gareth Southgate, but he's obviously in the England job until after 2024 anyway, is Mauricio Pochettino, who has that relationship with Kane, who might be able to say to him, look, we are going to build here. I've had the assurances. Stay with me. Stick it out. Sign and maybe a shorter-term contract and maybe give us another year. But, I mean, the sort of one-more-year syndrome. Well, there you go. And the one-more-year syndrome for Harry Kane, he must feel like he's heard this spiel so many times before that it does feel like it's going to come to a natural conclusion this summer.
The one-more-year kills anything for him, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
because of age, really. I mean, if Man United want to get to the next level, they need to get him.
It makes sense, doesn't it, from both parties?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is just such a good footballer all round. And not just his goals, but his all-round game. And, I mean, it's guaranteed goals, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, nothing comes with a guarantee, but it's guaranteed. But look, the difficulty is, if you're trying to tempt a Thomas Tuchel or somebody to your club, if any of these managers got a sniff, potential candidates got a sniff that Harry Kane's going to be going, that's going to put them off as well. I don't think going back to Pochettino is a good move.
Right.
I think it's early, but Vincent Kompany has done an amazing job. Everybody's talking about him going to Man City. There's no sign of Guardiola leaving there in the next couple of years. He signed a new contract. But not only is Kompany, does he demand respect, the style and the complete 360 that he's been able to achieve at Burnley in terms of the way they play, and he's been successful with it because they're going to be promoted as champions. They need to win 3 of the last 9 games. But they play great football as well. And I think that's one of the things with Tottenham. You have all these issues surrounding the board and the signings and the manager. And not only that, the fans are paying top dollar now to go to these games. And let's be quite honest about it. Tottenham are one of the poorer teams to watch. Mm-hmm. So I think an outside shot could be Vincent Kompany, whether he would fancy it or not, I don't know. But if you're getting Thomas Tuchel or somebody like that in, if you're selling Harry Kane, he's not coming.
If you're Kane,
yeah.
How much do you force this?
I'm going. I'm
not training. I'm not doing
it. Harry Kane, I don't see Harry Kane throwing his toys out to the pram to that level.
But he might have to, sure.
Quietly behind the scenes, I'm telling you, I'm reassuring you, I'm not signing a new contract. So either we go through this in 12 months' time and I just walk out the door a free man, so to speak, or you sign me, I move on. And while to James' point, there may not be a market for Harry Kane right now, Manchester United need a striker. Whether it's Harry Kane or Victor Osimhen, who's about 5 years younger, they're going to get somebody in. So if you're Daniel Levy, as difficult as it is doing business with Daniel Levy, you have to move because Harry Kane's not going to sign a new contract. Or if I'm Harry Kane, that's what I'm saying. And then I get to James' other point. What does it say about Spurs if both Antonio Conte and Harry Kane leave in the summer? We've heard everything we need to know about Spurs already from Antonio Conte. It something has to change, and maybe it needs this big an upheaval to really jar Spurs into doing what's needed long term, not just for the next 12 months and keeping Harry Kane, not just appeasing potential buyers. You have to do what's best for the club long term, and maybe that's the real punch in the arm that's needed.
Slim pickings for Extra Time. It will just be Craig and Shaka. Be sure to join us on the YouTube channel.
Very slim pickings.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
James has been bothering Aaron Ramsdale, a fantastic season, of course, he's been having alongside his teammates for Arsenal. James, it's interesting, he kind of epitomises the growth of Arsenal over the last year, considering when he was brought in, everyone's like, oh, why are we spending all this money on a goalkeeper when we need other positions filled as the priority?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to forget, I think, given how popular he is now, that he received quite a lot of online abuse prior to signing when that deal was widely reported. And a few days before it actually got over the line, he talked subsequently about receiving all sorts of threats about we know where you live and these sort of things from people, you know, who didn't want him to play for Arsenal. And, you know, he'd been relegated with Bournemouth, relegated with Sheffield United by his own admission. He wasn't a sort of natural ball player playing out from the back, one of those goalkeepers who's good with his feet. He's had to work very hard at that. So I think it's really nice to see somebody who's shown that strength of character and that resolve to be able to come through that and now be, as I say, a real cult hero among the fans. And I think that was really what I tried to get across in that piece. It just this strength of character, not just the fact that some of the saves that we can see here, you know, he's proved himself a very reliable and consistent performer, but he's showing that character that Arsenal really have been accused of lacking for so many years, you know, really embracing the fight. He gives out a bit to the fans. He takes abuse. He gives it. And I think that kind of strength of character is going to stand them in good stead for the running.
He seems to be Shaq, someone who enjoys this pressure, yeah. Embraces that attention.
And fair play to him. I couldn't understand the criticism because he's been relegated before. That didn't make any kind of sense. You're looking for someone to fit into the style of football that you're playing, and Arteta quite clearly saw that in Aaron Ramsdale. And from as difficult a job as it was at the time, despite the abuse, coming in for somebody like Bernd Leno, with his reputation and his standing, certainly within the German national team, etc., it's a tough ask for Aaron Ramsdale. But from the time he stepped foot on the pitch, not just his smile, but his focus. I felt he exuded a sense of a real sense of purpose, a sense of focus about how he went about business. He snarled when he needed to snarl. He smiled and laughed with players and fans when that was needed as well. I think it's wonderful to see a young goalkeeper kind of enjoying the ups and downs of a job, of a very stressful job. And I think he's been absolutely fantastic. As biased as I am, I don't think Arsenal could be where they are without Aaron Ramsdale.
It's difficult enough when you move to another club because there's always a doubt in your mind about how it's going to go for you and how the fans will react and the pressure. And I suppose it's the modern day, but players Journalists shouldn't have to cope. Players shouldn't be having to cope with that nonsense online, as well as all the other pressures. So it's admirable that it would have been easy to buckle. The doubt's just getting in your head because of all this nonsense on social media. And to put that sort of behind you and perform the way he's performed is quite amazing. And he has, to me, become one of the best goalkeepers, not only with his, well, obviously with his, the natural goalkeeping position, his hands, but Arsenal put him under a lot of pressure in terms of the way they play out at the back, right? They play a lot of risky balls across that six-yard box. And he has become one of the best. If you think about Matt Turner, the deputy, Matt Turner came in the cup game or was playing the cup games. He played in the first leg in Lisbon. Didn't have his best night, but also gave out several hospital passes.
Sure.
And it almost caught, well, I say almost cost Arsenal in the end. It didn't cost them that night, but almost did. And when you see that happening and you look at how Aaron Ramsdale's handled it, as well as the saves that he's made, he has been absolutely fantastic. But again, to do it on top of all the nonsense that you have to deal with, that does affect you.
Yeah.
You read, nobody reads something like that and can turn around and say, that does not affect me.
Right.
It puts a seed of doubt in your mind. So he has to be a mentally very strong young man as well.
Arsenal, of course, are sitting top of the table at the moment. Just a reminder as we head into the international break, looking good, aren't they? 8 points clear of Manchester City in second place. Meanwhile, at the other end of the table, it is going to be one heck of a scrap for survival. So many teams involved, including, of course, Crystal Palace, who don't sit many points ahead of the drop zone. There it is. I couldn't remember how many it was. 3 points look ahead of West Ham, who sit in 18th. Of course, sacking Patrick Vieira, Roy Hodgson announces the new coach today. I suppose the obvious question to ask you, James, is why?
Because they are worried about getting relegated. It's as simple as that. And I think it's worth just winding it back a little bit to remember that Patrick Vieira was not their first choice when Roy Hodgson left. They got very, very close to appointing Lucien Favre. He then turned that move down at the last minute. They looked at a number of other managers. I think they were talking to Frank Lampard, or they certainly looked at Frank Lampard before they settled on Patrick Vieira. And again, the same way we were talking about Tottenham earlier, it's a little bit like what they're doing now is they're trying to reset themselves as a club and going back to Roy Hodgson, obviously somebody who knows the club, local, I was going to call him a local boy, but he's 75 years old, but yeah, from the area. he knows the squad, which should help him hit the ground running. He talks to people like Wilf Zaha in particular, and they'll credit with Roy Hodgson with a lot for their development. You know, the fact that he knows them is a really big advantage to just get the, what would you say, 3, 4, maybe 5 wins they need to get over the line and avoid relegation. And then in the summer, they need to decide what kind of club they want to be. I think When they moved on from Roy Hodgson, I think they felt they wanted to be more progressive. They wanted to be more dynamic. They felt with Eze, with Elise, with Zaha, they had those creative, attacking, exciting players to be more than a functional 4-4-2. Get to 40 points, and if we get a few more, great. You know, they wanted to, I think, break that cycle and kind of grow as a team and grow as a club. Clearly, that hasn't worked with Patrick Vieira. I was there a few weeks ago when they drew 0-0 with Liverpool, and although Liverpool were terrible that night, Palace really, they were there for the taking, Liverpool, and Palace just did not have the conviction, the impetus and the drive, really, to get themselves over the line. And I think they're the only Premier League team not to win in the calendar year of 2023. And they just feel a bit rudderless at the moment. They don't really know where they want to go and what the next sort of stages are for them. So I think they thought, right, let's go and get the man in who knows the club inside out. He can keep us up. He won't probably have any aspirations about going into next season. It's not a case of if he wins 7 out of his 10, 11 games, he's suddenly going to decide, I want a new 2-year contract. I very, very much doubt that will be the case. So the job is pure and simple. Roy, come in. You know the club. You know the league. You know the players. Get us to 40-odd points. Thank you very much. Sail off to the sunset and then work out what kind of club we want to be.
I think we'll stay up. I don't think there's a doubt for me.
So this is the right decision?
If it's just about staying up, which it seems to be, because panic has set in and money has set in, and a lack of it if they go down, and what that would mean for the club. Don't forget, though, and it was a different scenario. Roy went into Watford. I mean, they were a shambles, but he couldn't keep them up. Mm. This is a slightly easier situation. But then, what happens in the summer? What direction do the club go, as James said? So, I mean, there's nothing. It's just short term. That's all it is. It's short term. It's be organised, be a bit more of a goal threat where they have really struggled, and get the points that they need so that they can make a decision going into the summer about where they go from here on. But yeah, it has to be frustrating. I mean, they've got a great fan base down there. Great atmosphere at Selhurst Park, one of the best group of fans. But boy, it's been tough the last couple of years, hiring and firing.
When was it Friday that the Fearon sacking was announced? I said my piece then and I stand by that. Everything I said on the day, I'll die on that hill. To James's point about what club Crystal Palace have to decide what club they are and who they want to be. I mean, I'm not sure that they know what they want to be, in all honesty. Patrick did a fantastic job last season. I don't think anybody questions that. In this summer, they lose Conor Gallagher, who I think was... Conor Gallagher was their player of the season last year.
Yep.
They lose their player of last season. They spend less money than anybody else in the Premier League. You lose your player of the season, and then you underspend everybody in the Premier League. What are you saying about who you are? What are you saying about your own intentions? I'm not sure that anybody at that club knows the direction that they want to take Crystal Palace in. And if this somehow buys them some time, well, good luck with it. Because, again, the best time to strengthen is on the back of a good season when you have some stability. They drop the ball at every single opportunity and they put all the blame on Patrick Vieira's feet. At this point, which direction Crystal Palace goes is on them.
Meanwhile, of course, Fulham not in the title at all, not in the title race, not in the relegation fight because of their fine start to the season. However, will they end the season without their lead striker Mitrovic? Obviously, big question mark over how many games he's going to get, James, after that rant at the referee at Old Trafford. What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, there's a process now with the independent regulatory panel to decide. They've already intimated that the three-game ban, the sort of statutory punishment, if you like, is insufficient. And I think really there's, you know, we can talk about whether this is better or worse or not as bad as the Fernandes incident at Anfield, but fundamentally, you know, they have to protect the officials. There's been a long debate about whether there's enough respect shown to match officials, and you just cannot touch a referee. That should be an absolute sort of sacrosanct rule of the game. You just shouldn't be able to touch a match official unless you're shaking hands with him before or at the end of the game, you know. And unfortunately, Mitrovic has crossed the line here, and I would imagine you would be thinking five games minimum. I'd be surprised if it was up near 8, 9, 10. It would feel to me as if it was 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that area would probably be a punishment fitting the crime. But as I say, it's difficult to know until the FA have gone through their due process. But the feeling certainly within referees, from what I'm told, is that there needs to be a statement sent to players here that this is not acceptable.
Just on that point, and the argument we had yesterday, obviously Frank and Steve were bringing up Bruno Fernandes. Why didn't the FA go through the due process for that incident?
Well, because the Fernandes one, although, I mean, look, I'm uncomfortable drawing distinctions between the two. Let me just make that clear. My position is if you touch a match official in anything like an aggressive way, that's a red card as far as I'm concerned. So that's my view. I can only assume that the FA, PGMOL, Premier League, they've all looked at that incident. And bearing in mind that the referee's report would have included it. So if the referee on the day has not deemed that to be a serious offence, then it wouldn't, you know, serve the authorities necessarily to start relitigating all of that and looking into those decisions. But I can only assume it's because the linesman or assistant referee has got his back to Fernandes, and it's sort of more of a petulant get out of my way rather than a challenge to his authority. Again, not a great distinction to draw, I don't think, but I can only assume it's because it's not as confrontational and it's more petulant than aggressive that Fernandes has got away with it.
I thought the assistant should have called the ref over in that game, and he should have got some sort of card for that, but it didn't happen. But I agree with James, it was more petty. The several problems I've got with the Mitrovic one was the aggression in it, and then the finger in the face and the pushing Chris Kavanagh back the way. That then culminated in half the squad, including the goalkeeper, running 60, 70 yards and wagging the finger in the face of Kavanagh. I mean, he was literally surrounded at one point. So it's a push here, and then the referee feels, I mean, he's almost
got his... right here, that
he's almost got his head nose to nose with Kavanagh. Watch here. And Shaq and I were talking about this at the weekend because we were doing the game, and I felt it was going to be somewhere around six games. And for the very reason that James mentioned, that you have to make an example of this, right? And the two wrongs don't make a right scenario with Fernandez, that's gone.
Yep.
You have to make an example with this. Otherwise, the referees are going to be uncomfortable. And quite frankly, you know, you couldn't do this 20, 30, 40 years ago, and you certainly can't do it now.
I'm with Craig and James on this fully.
I think six is about right?
Yeah. Initially, I was thinking four, but the more you see it, and as Craig was just pointing out, it's not just the initial touch. It's Mitrovic following the referee and getting in his face, and the referee having to back away. The referee being unable to hold any kind of ground, any kind of authority, where Mitrovic aggressively pursuing him. That, for me, just took it way over the edge.
Silva, speaking after the game, was frustrated, not particularly with the incident with Willian, with the fact that he felt all the decisions were going against him throughout, including the Luke Shaw push. They got that wrong, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was a petulant kick out, it seemed, from Anthony, which Shaq thought was, in particular, thought was one of the predicators of the manager losing.
I thought that was an easy call to make, the Anthony kick out.
So does that come into... Yeah,
but this was missed all round at the time.
Yeah.
In the game.
It comes into the discussion, it comes into an excuse for Silva.
Right.
But you say that in the post-game press conference. You don't do as Marco Silva did. You don't do as Mitrovic did. You don't. You complain, you write to the PGMOL or whoever, you write to whoever you want to.
Yep.
But you don't. Once Silva does as he does, it gives everybody on the park license to do similar. License to take the law, as it were, into their own hands. Once he does what he does, Mitrovic feels empowered to do as he then does. That's on Silva. That's on the manager. And because they were called missed, it doesn't excuse it.
Silva started a chain of events.
Right.
A chain of events that ultimately potentially cost him a semi-final. Mm. Because, yes, it was a penalty, and, yeah, Bruno Fernandes scored. I don't think there's much doubt about it being a penalty. And, yeah, they would have been down to 10 men. But Fulham were the better side in the game. With 10 men, Fulham could still have had some sort of competitiveness about them. But as soon as they go down to 9...
That's it.
That's gone. Mm. I mean, Man United were poor on that day. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Fulham couldn't have got themselves back in the game with a couple of changes. But once Silva does that, once Mitrovic loses it, once the rest of the players feel everything's going against them, it was gone. And the work for the first hour of that game, which was great from Fulham, and De Gea had to make some great saves, went all down the pan in the space of a few minutes.
We'll say thank you very much to James. James, what's going on International Week? Where are you off to?
Naples tomorrow for Italy England. So nice quiet evening there, I'm sure.
I'm sure it will be. Speak to Gab, he'll tell you where you should go. Don't order off the menu. He'll get very angry.
Make sure it's well done.
FA Cup then semi-finals, of course, live here on ESPN Plus. It will be Manchester United who will take on Brighton, Manchester City against Sheffield United. Those two games taking place on April the 22nd and 23rd.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You may have heard that many clubs are interested in young Jude Bellingham, of course, one of the hottest talents in Europe at the moment. Let's welcome in, shall we, Archie Rintat to discuss his future. Where's he going, Archie?
Away from Germany.
Right, OK, that's a good start. Right, is he going England away or Spain away?
That's a good question, Dan. I think Real Madrid is probably quite an attractive proposition. But the amount of interest that there is in the Premier League suggests that that's also quite a likely destination. The thing is, I think there's been some hope from the Borussia Dortmund side that maybe he could be persuaded to stay on for another season. But I would lay those hopes at around about 1% right now. It's going to take a major injury to him for something not to happen, for him to not leave the club in the summer. And the thing is, he's the sort of player who is going to be a first team starter in whichever team he goes to. So I think he needs to just be careful about which team that is and where's the right place for him, because we've seen someone move from Borussia Dortmund, an excellent young English talent who I think has struggled until now, in Jadon Sancho, where I wouldn't have said Manchester United was maybe the best choice at the time that he went. So, yeah, I think that Jude Bellingham will end up in only one of those places because they're the only places that have the money. He's not going to go to PSG, not with the way that project is looking right now. Question is the same as yours, Dan. I'm none the wiser because there's so much interest, understandably.
Let's play a game, boys. I got Stevie angry yesterday, so let's see.
Seriously?
Yes.
Is there anything in this planet that doesn't get him angry at the moment?
If you were Bellingham, the two front runners at the moment are Manchester City and Real Madrid. Where would you go?
I would go to Real Madrid. Just because of the allure of that club.
Right.
And there's going to be changes there. Sid Lowe talked about it at the weekend. How quickly that will come, I don't know. Are we ruling Liverpool out? Because it seems like a couple of weeks ago...
Yeah, I think we can rule Liverpool out.
Is that because of money or because of...
Yeah, it's easier just to have a two-way discussion.
That's what it comes right down to.
It makes my life easier.
Is three teams just too difficult for you to take
it? Yeah, a little bit too much. So what about Don's percentages?
What bit of this made him angry yesterday?
Well, because he said that at Manchester City, you're more likely to win things than Real Madrid. No, I pointed out that Real Madrid have been quite successful with, say, in the Champions League over recent years.
But they did win the league last year.
So then he just got angry at that.
How dare you?
What we don't know about City as well is they have all these charges hanging over them.
Yes.
And then there's a question mark is how long... Well, I suppose the managerial position at Real Madrid is always a revolving door. But then how long is this sort of Man City project going to last for Guardiola in terms of when he thinks, right, I've taken it as far as I can now, you know, maybe I'll take another sabbatical. Look, would he be in this? Would it be a good move to City? Absolutely, and he would play. But he can shuffle that squad around. I mean, I think the one thing with Madrid is we know Kroos and Modric, it will come to an end sooner rather than later.
Yes.
And then we're looking at Tchouameni and Camavinga and possibly a young Jude Bellingham. That sounds good to me. So I personally, if it was me, given that kind of choice, which I never had, I would be Real Madrid.
So another point that Steve did make, which is actually quite a valid point, is that you know what you're getting at the moment for Manchester City short term, and you know that Pep Guardiola is going to be in charge. For Real Madrid, it's a little bit more of an unknown.
Yeah, but Real Madrid kind of maintain that same identity. And to Craig's point, you accept that. Well, we sit and accept that Pep Guardiola is going to be there for the next few years, but given the charges hanging over them, you're not that certain. if it's me, there's not much of a discussion to this at all. Right. Real Madrid. And Craig mentioned, you see that the midfield three that are now, well, now broken up with Casemiro moving on, but how long Cruz, Modric, Casemiro, and how successfully they served Real Madrid. And now you look at what looks like the next generation of midfielders in Tchouameni and Camavinga coming through, and you being a third to that, and you cannot help but think that this is the next great midfield in world football, not just Real Madrid, for football. And you want to be a part of that. I as long as Real Madrid come anywhere close to what everybody else is offering, it's an easy decision.
It obviously, Arch brought up a good point. Yeah, go on, Archie.
I'd add to that. If he wants to be a star, which he already is, then go to Man City. If you want to be a mega star, then go to Real Madrid. He is very good mates with Erling Haaland from his time at Borussia Dortmund. That might play a role as well. But I think that the bigger picture in terms of where he gets his recognition and where he would be at his brightest, I think that Real Madrid is the answer to that.
To Archie's point that he made before, Jadon Sancho, of course, has pretty much flopped since that 100 million move from Dortmund to Manchester United. Is there any fears that we could see Bellingham go in the same direction if he doesn't go to the right club?
I don't think so. I think it's two different scenarios. I think Bellingham is a more consistent player. I think Sancho is more of a flair player, but we're not seeing enough of that flair. Could be confidence, maybe affected by the poor managerial decisions that United were having at the time. This manager has shown Ten Hag that he can get the best out of players. We have seen some small improvement in Sancho at times, but I think Bellingham, whenever you see him, you know, even when you watch Sancho at Borussia Dortmund, it could be a bit hot and cold,
yeah.
But when you watch Jude Bellingham, he's a good, steady 7 or 8 out of 10 when he's having a poor day by his standards. So, no, I don't think him moving to any club is going to affect his consistency, his performance. The only thing that will affect it for me is injuries.
We know how heavy that Real Madrid shirt can be. We've seen players in the past, of course, make that move. Young Odegaard obviously made that move, had to wait some time for him to develop, and now shining at Arsenal. Is there any concern that he could go there too early and the pressure could be too much?
Not for me, not right now, no. And I think because you're still having that transition with Cruz and Modric, having them kind of playing their time out at Real Madrid, you get a soft introduction, you will see significant minutes, but you don't have to play every single game and you don't have to be a standout star every single game. And while those two phase themselves out, again, you're phasing your way in to what looks like Real Madrid's long-term midfield.
We're talking about a boy that went to Germany, what, at 16?
Yeah, from Birmingham, yeah.
You know, to a huge club, to a different country, and how he's came through at Dortmund in front of big crowds playing in the Bundesliga tells me that even as a teenager, he's in control of all that. Because at that age, you could easily be affected by all those scenarios that I mentioned. The homesickness, the pressure to perform at Dortmund, the nerves in front of big crowds. Yeah, Real Madrid is a step up. But if you can go and do that as a 16-year-old to Dortmund, by this time now, when you're a seasoned, regular England international and one of the hottest prospects on the planet, not a problem.
I think that to that point, you could say the same about Sancho. I think his struggles are more to do with Manchester United and Ole Solskjaer, who's the manager at the time, just simply not having a plan for him. Not quite sure how they were going to use him. You could probably make the same accusation around Van de Beek when he came in. And it just seemed like Manchester United was spending money on bringing players in just because they had the money and they wanted to bring players in. Not necessarily that they knew what they were going to do with them. And as a result, those players struggled to find where they were most valuable, struggled to find form, confidence eroded. And once your confidence goes, that's a tough thing to get back. And that's where Jadon Sancho is right now.
Bellingham's side, of course, sitting at the top of the Bundesliga after quite the weekend, which, of course, saw Bayern Munich lose against Bayer Leverkusen. April 1st, we'll see the Klassiker, and it will be one point that separates the top two going into that clash. Nagelsmann not happy after that defeat against Leverkusen, saying today we were lazy defensively and offensively. Some players had a 0% rate. We were really weak in our own game presentation. Nagelsmann pulling no punches. Is it the players and their laziness who've been getting the blame in the post-mortem in Germany over the last couple of days, Archie?
the players have been taking responsibility for it as well. Thomas Muller saying that with this kind of performance, they're not going to be winning the title. Sporting director Hasan Salihamidžić talking about how this is not what Bayern Munich is about. There's been no real need for the media to go in on them because Bayern have been going in on themselves just as hard. So it's a result that is not all that surprising because Bayern have been really fluctuating this season between this kind of meh performance and hitting the heights against some of the other teams in the division, albeit just not with any real consistency of performance, I'd say. I think the fact that Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting was missing for them up front was a big problem. And the fact that he's got back problems which could extend to that game against Borussia Dortmund is a problem as well. More to the point, Jamal Musiala missing out on the Germany internationals in this break. And what was being written in one of the Munich papers is that he's likely to only be fully fit by the time that the Manchester City Champions League game comes back around. Now, Borussia Dortmund have, it's been reported in the Bild newspaper over here that they think that that might be a bluff, that they're going to be preparing for him to be fit against against Borussia Dortmund on the 1st of April. So I can understand that line of thinking, but Bayern Munich are on the ropes here, and it would be embarrassing for them, Dan, if they don't win the Bundesliga title. A few years ago, Borussia Dortmund were lampooned for the fact that they gave up a 9-point lead to Bayern Munich. It's happened this season to Bayern. Bayern were 9 points ahead of Dortmund, the World Cup break, and somehow, with all the resources in their team that they've had, they've managed to throw it away. And I think that Julian Nagelsmann, because he's got through in the Champions League, he's under pressure, not as much pressure as he was before that PSG game, but he needs a big performance in that City game as well, because if they lose the Bundesliga, he's going to be feeling it.
Well, let's take a look at the odds, shall we? Manchester City are favourites to advance, as you would expect, of course, favourites in the tournament overall, over those two legs to get it through and get it done and go through to the semi-finals. Archie, where do we stand on the expectations of Bayern and what Nagelsmann needs to do to keep his job, looking at these two games specifically?
I think that Bayern need to be on eye level with City, right, as they say in German. They talk
how
about
do you say in German? Make Derek proud. How do you say it?
Auf Augenhöhe. They
yes.
talk about, you know, seeing them right there. And that's going to be the most important thing, I think. They're going to need Choupo-Moting fit for that. And that sounds strange given that he wasn't a factor at the start of the season. In fact, the first Bundesliga game he started this season was their 10th game of the season. So he needs to be fit so that Bayern have a focal point. The likes of Leroy Sané and Serge Gnabry need to buck up their ideas a bit. Kingsley Coman, I would say, is their shining hope right now in terms of the attacking players that they've got going forward. So, look, of course they can challenge Manchester City. I think they were a bit fortunate against PSG that Marquinhos had to go off with an injury because until that point, PSG were handling them pretty well in the second leg. Still, they did up their game undoubtedly in the second half. Has an excellent tactical sight of the game, which is always supported by his players, even the ones who aren't necessarily getting all that much game time as well, which I think is a real testament to how good you are as a coach. So, look, he's similar to Pep Guardiola as well, in that sometimes I think he overthinks things. It's going to be a great game, and I expect Bayern to attack, and that should produce some entertainment for all of us.
It's an indictment as to where Bayern are, isn't it? That their expectation is to be competitive with Manchester City, not to get humiliated almost.
Well, I don't think that will happen, but I think if City get their backline right and don't get caught on the counter-attack, I don't see any reason why, over the two legs, they can't and shouldn't win this game. But I keep saying it about City. They've just found ways to shoot themselves in the foot in the knockout stages against the real big teams.
Yeah.
And Bayern is the real big team that they've got. They didn't want them this early, but they've got them. The other side of the coin is, I think
I don't know whether they would prefer it or not, but I think it would have been better if City had played in Munich first.
Right.
And then back to the Etihad. If you think about the Real Madrid game last year, it was comfortable at the Etihad to an extent, and then it all unravelled for them in the second leg and in the away game. That's what they're going to face here. So yeah, the question. I think there is much a question of Manchester City here as there is of Bayern Munich, purely because they've got Haaland scoring all those goals. They've got this manager who's yet to get over the line with both Bayern and City. They've got a fantastic squad. They're playing well. Are they going to do what they've done in previous years again, or are they going to get the job done?
Does it help Bayern being the underdog at all?
I don't think they're overly concerned about that. City have been favourites in this competition for the last three or four seasons. So I don't think if those two had matched up at this stage of competition in previous years, it would have been the same. I don't think that's a factor at all. The only thing about this, and why it's so tough to call, is because of the inconsistencies of both of them. Both of them, when they play well, they're great. But we've seen the other side of that same performance, and where you've had disappointing performances and disappointing results. And you're not quite sure which version of either is going to show up. Truth is, pound for pound, if both teams are at their best, I think City is slightly better than Bayern Munich. But again, there's no guarantee that the best version of City is going to show up. So it really does come down to who holds their nerve on the day.
That's it. We'll say goodbye to Archibald. What are you doing international break? What's happening in the Rintat household? Anything exciting?
Actually going down to Munich for us. In a few days, ahead of our big Classica coverage, which you'll find out more about in the week of it.
I wish you were Derek. I hope it's like a...
Hey. Not even Derek knows.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it. Just a reminder then.
There's a word for that in German.
Is there? Big secret. Thank you very much. The Classica then, live on ABC on April the 1st. What a game it should be in Munich. Of course, we've got major secret coverage. Well, it's not that secret, because as he's just told you, it's Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Coverage starts at 12 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Sevilla's 2-0 defeat against Getafe at the weekend was the final straw for the Sevilla board. Sampaoli has been sacked as coach. Bringing him back did not work, did it? Just a reminder where Sevilla stand in the table. Not many would have predicted this, but they are in real danger, sitting 14th, just 2 points clear of the drop zone. La Liga, of course, on international break. When it returns, all the games live on ESPN+. Just a reminder of those sides. It starts with Mallorca against Osasuna. And then the start of April, Sevilla will take on Cadiz away from home. It is Elche against Barcelona. Real Madrid take on Real Valladolid. All these games live then on Plus. I'm not sure if you've seen the video. This was Lionel Messi going out for dinner in Argentina. Of course, the first time he's celebrating winning the World Cup. Unbelievable scenes. You just saw hordes of people trying to just get a glimpse of him. And he just seems to be loving it. Hey!
He's hungry.
Is this after the World Cup?
This was yesterday. This is now back for International Week. He went out for dinner.
Is that what yours looks like, Shaq?
Yeah, that's meat carnival.
That's carnival. Basically, Craig in Glasgow is the complete opposite.
Yeah. He's chasing crowds.
Thank you very much. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Just the three of us today, Shaka and Craig with us. Pardon?
Why?
Why?
There's always somebody
International
else.
Week, isn't it? Quiet.
That's right.
What's he doing?
isn't that the worldwide signal for... Yeah.
Who are we phoning?
I don't know.
You don't like it when we have a cast of thousands on anyway. You like it intimate. I wanted to bring up something you said on the show, actually.
Oh.
Maths. Because you said that Vincent Kompany has, what did you say, turned around Burnley completely.
He always says that. He always says 360. But, no, 360, he always says that.
But 360 would be exactly the same
back
direction.
Back face in the same way, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You always say 360. I always have a little chuckle, to be fair.
Why have you never told me this
before? No, tell you now.
You say it so confidently. Confidently.
If you're a friend. You're a real friend. Instead of letting me...
I was enjoying it too much.
Instead of letting me bury myself every day, every week.
It is every day, every week. You said it with such confidence as well. It's great.
A full 360.
Yeah, that means you're going in the same direction again.
No, you've gone all the way around and you're going different. What do you know about maths anyway? So it's a 180.
Exactly, 180, yeah.
Anything else?
I'm
waiting for him to fight me on that.
Oh, no. Because he says it a lot. He says it a lot.
Nobody else has mentioned it.
There you go.
I was enjoying it.
You don't know what a 360 is.
Hey, on Shaka, NASA. NASA scientist, isn't
college.
It? Mate, because you went to college. You're in your college way.
You know what? Such a shallow life you lead. That's it. Sitting there, taking note of that.
No, just a mental note. That's one of your sayings.
Where's the extras?
Yeah.
Where's the extras?
No, don't change the subject.
No, listen, trust me.
Right.
It will remain a 360. No, trust me on that.
Craig's got that. 360, other side of the coin. That's another one he likes.
Other side of the coin.
Yeah. There you go. Conte run the risk of becoming unmarketable as a manager, or would clubs still go for him considering his track record of success?
The latter.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, clubs are good.
Yeah. Because you know what you're getting.
Yeah,
a pain in the butt.
Yes.
You never know, Spurs. Spurs might do a full
360. It takes one to know one.
Spurs might do a full 360.
So, do you think so?
How you got to again?
Well, they could. If they want to go a different direction, they'd do a full 360.
Craig, the England Golden...
I'm just going to do cliches on this extra time.
Oh, good. I look forward to it. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Craig, the England Golden Generation was said to have been held back by club cliques. Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea. Were there big divisions in the Scottish national team dressing room with old firm or Scottish club groups versus England-based players?
No. And you'd think there would be... potentially a problem between Celtic and Rangers players, but there wasn't. Not in my time. McCall and McCoist and all these guys, brilliant guys. And no, there's no resentment or jealousy or bitterness about people going to play in England.
Stevie said there was, wasn't there, his generation at Scotland. There was kind of a divide between those that played in Scotland and those that played in England, like the Liverpool group, for example. From the stories he's been telling me.
Well, that's possible. I'm trying to think. I think the bulk of our squads, and I'd have to look back, which I'm not going to do.
No.
We're probably playing in England.
Right.
But I might be wrong on that. I don't know. But never really an issue. No.
Jack, was there a divide in the Trinidad and Tobago?
There was actually.
Was there?
I think that was perpetuated mainly by. How the game was run locally, because came this divide between foreign-based players, as we were termed, and as locally based players. So I always hated that term because I felt that fractured our squad. And certainly at the time, we had a lot of players playing outside of Trinidad and Tobago. I think
when
we woke up our 23-man squad, 13 were playing in England or Scotland.
Right.
But then that was also helped, for want of a better term, by the fact that when we were playing in England, locally based players would still train with the national team every week or couple of weeks or whatever. There'd be no water. Facilities wouldn't, the grass wouldn't be cut. Nonsense like that. Their uniforms weren't clean. But then, as soon as the players from abroad came back, all those things were in place.
There'd be VIP.
So then the players who were living and playing in Trinidad and Tobago felt that there was this kind of big divide.
Yeah.
But no.
Understandably so.
But no, for those of us who are playing in England, there's not much we could do because, we're in England, and then when we come back, we're not witnessing that. So as much as we all try to stand up for each other and make sure that those players were as well looked after as we were, because we were so far away, there's only so much we could do. So it was always difficult trying to manage.
What surprises you guys the most at this point in the season? Ready? Arsenal being 8 points clear, Barcelona being 12 points clear, or Bayern not being top of the Bundesliga?
Arsenal.
I think so. Yeah, I think...
We had a similar question the other day. But who's done a, who's had a better season? Better season? Who are going to win La Liga or Arsenal? And again, the answer was Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because at the start of the season, you could have seen Barcelona obviously compete with Real Madrid for the title, particularly signing Lewandowski. Nobody.
No, Arsenal, are they going to finish top four?
Nobody saw this coming.
No.
I think at the start of the season, if you asked us who would be top two in each of those countries, we'd have said Real and Barcelona.
Yeah.
We'd have said Dortmund and Bayern. And we'd have said Man City and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Nobody would have thought that Arsenal would even be in top two.
No. Bayern Munich might win the league. So it's not, that's...
You know. Stevie didn't even have them in top four.
No, and, no. Well, that's a different
No, he's done a full 360 and he is Arsenal's biggest fan.
He has done a 360, hasn't he?
Yes.
You're gonna drag the backside.
Yeah, yeah, I really am. I really.
I'm okay with that because I think I'm actually correct. And you know me, Shaq. I'm always wanting back down.
Yeah, well,
if I feel that I'm wrong, I'll back down.
Now,
however, I'm wrong in this one. I'm going to look it up tonight.
There's a video doing the rounds of Aaron Ramsdale, bringing a particular brand of tea bags with him to the England camp. Was there anything in particular you two would always bring with you on international duty which you couldn't do without? That's a good question.
No.
What would you bring back from Trinidad then? That you couldn't get?
Oh, I'd bring all... We have all kind of preserved fruits, all kind of nonsense that I grew up eating as a kid. That
right.
I'd just bring... Like, my suitcase would be weighed down with...
Because Stevie's Eleanor brings an empty suitcase to the UK when she goes.
I'm not that bad.
And then fills it all with, like, candy.
Not that bad. We do tamarind balls, we do...
Do what, sorry?
We use tamarind, I guess you pronounce. We make it as a bowl with candy.
Oh.
We coat it in sugar. Oh, I love that.
Sounds good.
And then we fry chickpeas. We call that chana. I'll bring big bottles of that.
Oh.
I'd just be waiting.
Why you never bring this in to us on your many trips to Trinidad?
I used to bring them. I used to have them on the desk.
Then what happened?
Then I just kept eating all by myself.
You kept them in your long drawer.
So he takes tea bags?
Yes.
That's very particular, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean...
What would you take? Nothing.
Because I'll get a cup of tea.
Right. Not like your own pillow or anything like that?
A little teddy bear.
Aww. Little teddy bear, little tartan bear.
Yeah, because I'm a bit lonely, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I mean, even if you go into places like Minsk and Belarus where things are not as salubrious, I'll try to find the right...
Oh.
I'm not taking stuff because I want a cup of tea.
Some of you English are particular about your tea, though. See that look.
Tea.
Do you like tea?
No. I don't like tea.
Some of the ones in the supermarkets here are just...
I don't like tea or coffee.
...are not the best.
No.
I get my Irish tea now.
Do you?
I've gone out the Irish tea.
Oh, lovely. What a fascinating conversation this is. Craig, which high-profile signing has disappointed you the most? Richarlison, Anthony or Mudrick?
Have we seen Mudrick?
Well, I think that's a disappointment. Like, he had that cameo, didn't he, when he first signed, came on really fast. It was excellent. Played the first half of one game.
By the way, what's happened to your collar?
I don't know what's happened. No, it's not a very stiff collar.
You need starch.
Yeah.
Mudrick. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Anthony.
What was the other one?
Richarlison. Richarlison's been hot and cold, but he's not always in game time. Conte's not played him.
Shaq?
Mudrick.
Oh, sorry, I thought you finished.
You can have my go. Go ahead. Have my go.
Go 360.
Oh, man. Which player brought in during the January transfer window has had the best impact on their new team?
Yeah.
Can't we just run the Jan video? Because we're struggling here.
What video?
The one where he runs round and...
No, we're not struggling.
Vicious.
Just because you're upset because
Well, I've got standards and I think we're struggling.
On the Jan video. That's a classic, to be fair.
Who came
best January signing?
Trossard? Yes, you're right, Dad.
Yes, I am right.
Enzo Fernandez.
Better than Trossard?
You just asked me, I'm throwing a name out there.
Right, OK.
Who else?
Pedro Porro.
Pedro Porro. Just because he's got a fun name to say.
Pedro Porro.
Yeah,
Trossard,
yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Okay, final question.
I'm not gonna...
More important to the development of a young goalkeeper?
Ooh.
Training with a top-notch coach?
A brain.
Or actual game...
Ooh. For a year, how young are we talking here?
I've just got young, Shaq.
Well, I'm asking you, your judge.
I'm going to say 12.
That's silly.
Why?
I think the question is more about...
Talented goal.
Teenage
coach.
30.
I'm going to go talented coach. At that age, coach gets a technique right.
Right. Which is more important than game time?
At 12, yes.
Okay.
Would you like to offer an age?
No.
Okay. There we go. We'll go 12. 12.
12, there we go. 12, get a good coach. Perfect. So that is it. We are done. Are you back tomorrow?
No.
Wow.
Neither am I, Dan.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Well, you can bore other people with your 360.
With your maths.
With your maths.
Or you and your maths.
You're trying to tell me that's not a full 360.
We'll be back tomorrow.